Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the lecture this evening. We're very pleased that this is the second public lecture in our anniversary year, and we're very pleased also that we're balancing our perspectives between Greece and Cyprus as the Hellenic observatory.
Welcome, everybody, to the first public event of the Mathematics, LSE Mathematics Department in 2016. My name is Jan van den Heuvel. I'm one of the members.
Yeah, and this later, in case we need it,
okay,
I just have it.
Good, yeah.
Because it's not going to be a PowerPoint presentation, just in case we need to see the.
Just when you think technology is your friend. And you suspected that was going to be more interesting than my introduction. Anyway, we are very pleased to welcome our speaker this evening, and for this, the second event to be focused on Cyprus and its future. Tonight, therefore, is an important occasion for us to be able to take stock, to look at future scenarios, future risks for Cyprus and the Eastern Mediterranean. And we're delighted to welcome the High Commissioner of the Republic of Cyprus, Evripides Evriadis, to speak to us this evening. Evripides is exceptionally well qualified to cover the topic for tonight. In addition, of course, to being High Commissioner in the UK, previously he has served in a number of countries. He's been ambassador to the United States. He's been ambassador in the Netherlands and Israel, been the High Commissioner in Canada. He's had senior positions in the ministry in Cyprus. He's also a graduate of the Kennedy School at Harvard University. So he brings a number of experiences, expertise, and skills to this topic this evening. As is usual, we're going to invite Evripides to speak to us in a moment. There will be plenty of time for questions and answers afterwards. And so we're delighted to make a start. And can you please join me in welcoming the High Commissioner of the Republic of Cyprus, Evripides Evriadis.
Of you, and I feel honored to be here standing in such a distinguished institution as the LSE, who has produced good politers and not idiots. And I use the word idiot in the classical sense of the word, because in ancient Greece, the persons that they were politers, they were the ones who really engaged themselves in the common good. And the idiotes, the private persons, were the ones that were only concerned with themselves. Hence, the word idiot comes from idiotes, and of course, the word idiot nowadays has very, very negative connotations. Great pleasure to be here. Congratulations on the 20th anniversary for all the work that has been done. LSE has produced good minds. Two of them, three, four, five are here, and Christopher Pissarides, who is our first Nobel laureate, and we're very proud of him. Vasilis Hajvasiliou, another professor. We are really proud to be representing Cyprus here in this country, and be proud for every single Cypriot that excels in the Homeric spirit. Katerina Mina in her own way, so many other people here. So, without much ado, and Kevin, half an hour maximum, 25 minutes maximum, cut me off, please, because I have a way to go on. I will very, very briefly start with the European Union, since this is the hot topic of the day, whether there is going to be Brexit, or whether it's going to be Remain, or the country might sleepwalk itself to a Brexitant. It looks increasingly that the referendum will take place around end of June, 23rd or so, it looks. But I will start with the European Union and say, despite all the debate that is happening here, the European Union is and remains the single most important politico-geostrategic experiment in the history of humankind. and that is the forest you. Now, I'm going to be taking you slowly from the European Union to the Eastern Mediterranean. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the issues of the Eastern Mediterranean and the threats that are faced right now and the security challenges that are faced in the Eastern Mediterranean, Cyprus's role in that, how that role can be enhanced through a solution, and the way that we go forward. It is a tall order because every single dossier can be a different speech in itself, okay? It's going to be a bit epidermic without much horizontal analysis. But since everything is connected to everything else, I hope that in the end it will all come together and will make sense to you. And of course, I'm not here for an easy time. I'm here to be grilled. I'm here to be given a hard time. So there will be plenty of time to ask questions. Cyprus's accession to the European Union in 2004, it is the single most important strategic development that has happened to the island since 1960. And the hallmark of the European Union, despite of what is said and done here about the fallacies and some of the shortcomings of the European Union, the hallmark of the European Union has been to extend the zone of peace and stability and economic prosperity to the countries that it has engulfed. Think where Europe was 50 years ago and where Europe is now. This is irrespective of the problems, Professor, irrespective of the Eurozone, irrespective of migration, which are issues, of course, do or die issues that need to be addressed. But one has to look at the forest, not just the trees. And if there are some bad trees in the forest, that doesn't take away from the beauty of the forest. The hallmark of the European Union is that which I have said, extending the zone of peace and stability to the countries that it has engulfed. That's why a number of countries that are not members of the European Union want to join. Therefore, by that virtue, by Cyprus's membership to the European Union, being a member of the European Union, it means that the hallmark of the European Union is extending itself in the strategic corner of the Eastern Mediterranean. What is the Eastern Mediterranean? The Mediterranean itself has always had a strategic and geopolitical importance and a geographic unity with the Middle East and the wider region. This has been the case since the time of Alexander the Great. It has throughout the Cold War, World War I, World War II, Cold War, and more so now. Historically, when Europe was detached from the Eastern Mediterranean, when Europe lost control of the waves, violence ensued for the entire European continent. Whoever therefore aspired to control the Middle East had to also control the Eastern Mediterranean. Eastern Mediterranean means Cyprus, at the strategic corner, at the crossroads of three continents, Middle East, Europe, and Asia. Eastern Mediterranean spells Suez Canal. There we are here. Is it? Yeah. Suez Canal. Trade, energy now with the hydrocarbons, conventional and asymmetrical threats, ISIS, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Lebanon, a forgotten war in Yemen, Middle East peace process, if we can call it peace process, but the Palestinian issue. So from a military and strategic perspective, the East Mediterranean should be a theater of stability than instability. It should be a theater not of conflict, but of peace, a theater of predictability. That's what the Eastern Mediterranean should be. This is what the biggest theorists and the strategic thinkers of our time are saying. The Eastern Mediterranean is of cardinal importance, of course, for all the countries in the region, including Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, Greece. And of course, it touches at the wider issues of securities of the EU, and of course, the transatlantic relationship with the United States. The region is in flux. The region is in turmoil. Their narrative has yet to be written, and I do not know for how long we're going to have to be witnessing these asymmetrical threats that are facing. Therefore, the short end of it is that the European Union, the world, the United States need in the Eastern Mediterranean a credible, predictable, dependable partner that produces security. And by the way, I think Kevin had also said that whatever I say is on the record. hashtag LSC Cyprus. Those one that follow me is at my name, and then you can follow or unfollow. It's up to you. But at any rate, so whatever I say, whatever I say is on the record, and I still want to have a job after I finish, of course. Now, the European Union needs in the region, as I said, predictable partners. Guess what? I'm here to tell you that Cyprus is such a partner. I'm here to tell you that Cyprus, is in this strategic corner of the Eastern Mediterranean, produces security. It's not a security consumer, produces security despite the division that exists. Okay? And there is no question whatsoever where Cyprus belongs in terms of the architecture and the security structure. It is part of the Western security system, pure and simple. Now, I did say that we are producing, of course, security, and I want to give you some examples of that in terms of our immediate and without any hesitation fight against ISIS. Now, we have to call it Daesh, you know, because it is, we'll come back about about ISIS. We have proven in word and deed that we are credible and dependable. I think this, there is a greater recognition of Cyprus's role in all this, and I think the fact that we had the first visit ever of a Minister of Defense in the United Kingdom about a few days ago, I think is telling of the importance that the United Kingdom attaches in this relationship and how that relationship has grown steadily in addressing the asymmetrical threats that we're facing, be they terrorism, be they human trafficking, be they money laundering and whatever have you. We have had trilateral meetings between Cyprus, Israel, and Greece, between Cyprus, Egypt, and Greece. There could very well be Jordan coming on board, and of course, with the solution of the Cyprus problem, we want Turkey to come on board as well, and I will address that issue as well. Vice President Biden, on two occasions, described the relationship as strategic. And when the Vice President of the United States talks in those manners, then we know that we have slowly, slowly moving in the right direction. Are we there? No, we're not. Are there more things that need to be done? Yes, more things need to be done. One of the things that needs to be done, of course, is to go forward and solve the Cyprus question, because by solving the Cyprus question, then this predictable, credible role will become even strengthened, because right now we are divided, and divisions are always a source of instability and conflict. Divisions in Vietnam, Yemen, Ireland, Germany, no two situations are the same, of course not. But no two situations are exactly different either. Therefore, the situation on the ground in Cyprus is lose-lose. Therefore, we have to go forward and solve the question. The status quo is not sustainable. With the solution of the problem, which I will talk to you about very, very shortly, what progress we have made and some of the stumbling blocks, then one of the anomalies that exists in the Eastern Mediterranean will be solved for the benefit of the region, but first and foremost for the people themselves. Because even though Cyprus is seen as an unsinkable aircraft carrier by many, and it is no secret that so many years after independence, the British have two bases on the island, which, by the way, are sovereign territory. I mean, when we're talking about the Republic of Cyprus is east, west, north, south, but not the two bases. Even though Cyprus and the United Kingdom are members of the European Union, the bases are not members of the European Union. Even though the United Kingdom is not a member of the Eurozone, it doesn't intend to join the Eurozone, the Euro is, of course, legal tender in the bases themselves. So, let me come now to the Cyprus question very, very briefly. And as I said, epidermically, I'm doing all these things without much debt, and then all these things will come through the question and answer. There was a joint declaration in 11 February 2014 between the president and the then Turkish Cypriot leader, and which describes the general idea of which way to go forward. This received a major boost with the selection of Mr. Akinci. Let me see what else is in here. Okay, no, before I go to that, okay. Here is, just to show you a little bit of what we're talking about, this is the Nicosia Flight Information Region. So you see, anybody that goes through there, they has to pass through our own flight information region. So even though the country is small, when you put the flight information region, when you put the maritime zones of jurisdiction, the country is not so small. And with the fact that you have energy, which is another asset, then you really start talking about major things. What else we have here, 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 and that's the end. Okay. No, because I didn't, last time I had a PowerPoint presentation, I was ahead of myself. This time I said no, but just put some maps to visualize things and stuff. At any rate, with the selection of Mr. Akinci as the Turkish Cypriot leader, then the negotiations received a boost, a substantive boost, because Mr. Akinci is a good man, he has a good track record on rapprochement, and therefore things were moving forward. We do have, as I said, the joint declaration of 11 February 2014, which I'm not going to read it to you. I mean, it's there for everybody to see. That provides the framework. There has been, friends, substantial progress. Progress that I would not have thought was possible 3 years ago. There's an excellent chemistry between the president and the Turkish Cypriot leader. They are both just about the same age. They are both from Limassol. They're Cypriots. One, of course, of Greek ethnic background, and he's proud of it. Cypriot of Turkish ethnic background, but he's also proud of it. But above all, Cypriots and a homeland. So that itself ushered in a new hope. And the progress has been going on, okay? Therefore, when people are asking me, when are we going to have the solution? Are you going to go to a referendum? Of course, my answer to that is, I wish I had a crystal ball in front of me. I don't. Those of you that know me, I also like to have humor in my life. Many of you know about Wagner's Ring Cycle, Katerina. How long does it last? Days. And there are two guys that are listening to it, and the guy said, well, when is this going to be over? And the answer was, you know, when the fat lady sings. Okay, what is she going to sing? I do not know. Because we are cognizant of the fact that we cannot be negotiating for the next 30 years, but also at the same time, not to put any deadlines, which are usually artificial deadlines, because progress has to be, the solution has to go on, the referendum must take place, which should be progress-based. You cannot have anything which is artificial, because at the end of the day, what are you going to do? Those were the lessons of 2004. Because if you don't meet the deadline, what do you do? Then you start a blame game. It was your fault. It was my fault. Do you blame the clock that you didn't meet the deadline? What do you do? Cognizant of the fact that we don't have years to negotiate, at the same time, you cannot rush. You cannot rush these things. Now, substantive issues really have yet to be discussed. And when I say substantive issues, I mean territorial adjustments, which is inextricably linked with the property issue. 37.6% remains under military occupation. I know that my Turkish Cypriot compatriots don't like me to talk about military occupation, but that's what it is, with 35,000 Turkish troops. That territorial adjustments have to be 37.6%, like I said, is there. That has to be adjusted. Property issues of the internally displaced. And when I say property issues, I mean Cypriot Greeks that lost their property, but also there are also Cypriot Turks that left from the government-controlled area of the Republic, and they are in the northern part. So they left property as well, in Paphos and right on the beach, and that is prime land. So property has to be addressed. There has been progress on the property issue in different categories, but still we're not there. Security guarantees, which we consider to be an anachronism. What were those security guarantees in 1960? Free guarantor powers, Turkey, Greece, and the United Kingdom, exercising, guaranteeing the independence, territorial integrity of Cyprus. From our perspective, that system was a colonial system. That system did not serve the interests of the Cypriots, and that guarantee, and nobody guaranteed the guarantees. Because they failed the Cypriots miserably. Now, we do not want to go back to that system, because we consider it anachronistic. We don't consider it necessary, because Cyprus is a member of the European Union. In a previous life, I was ambassador to the Council of Europe, and I was authorized at the time, and the offer, of course, still stands. For us to accept for the federal state of Cyprus, to accept a priori all conventions protecting human rights for the protection of everybody. We have to, nowadays, security is not just simply a function of armies and how many missiles you have and how many tanks you have, and there is deterrence and what my professor Graham Allison used to call MAD, mutual assured destruction. Well, MAD is MAD. Nowadays, security is not defined with these. Security comes through, yes, common values. The European Union, we come back to it, being an experiment where a country like Luxembourg is no longer afraid that a country like Germany would invade it and occupy it. Security comes through these issues. A double security problem on the island, because the Cypriot Greeks feel insecure on the island because Turkey is there. Cypriot Turks also feel insecure on the island. An absolute security for one side is absolute insecurity for the other side. So what do you do? How do you address the issue? I believe we address the issue through the membership that we are in the European Union, through all these mechanisms of protecting human rights, while Cyprus continuing having its role, its predictable role in the area, because you cannot these days come. From our perspective, and see what is happening in Turkey, we are very, very much concerned, to put it mildly. When we are told, as we were told several times, that Cyprus is in Turkey's vital space, even if there was no Muslim Turk in Cyprus, Turkey should still maintain a Cyprus problem. No country can be indifferent to such an island which finds itself in the heart of its own vital space, quote unquote, from the current Prime Minister of Turkey. Vital space is Levant's realm. And when we're talking about Levant's realm, there should be a cold, my spine gets cold. Any European gets cold, his spines about Levant's realm. And when you have the esteemed and distinguished president of Turkey, I speak with full respect, because any president of any country commands respect, for heaven's sakes. But the other day, Hitler was cited as an example of a strong presidency. Levant's realm, vital space. Hitler being cited. And so many other things happening. The messages that come to us are not exactly the most reassuring, because the solution has to be also guaranteed by Turkey. Therefore, that thing itself, I do not know how the thing eternally itself will play. These core issues that I mentioned have to be decided, and they will not be decided by the Cypriots themselves. They're not going to be decided by the president and the Turkish Cypriot leader. I think they are reaching to the point where what they can do is still more work that needs to be done by them, but Turkey's role in this is pivotal. Turkey's role in this is pivotal. Would the pronouncements, public pronouncements that they want the solution materialize. As President Reagan used to say, we trust, but we verify. And the verification will come through the talks. I mean, everybody wants to have a solution. Of course everybody wants a solution. Do you know any? I don't know anybody that doesn't want to have a solution. But it is what kind of a solution you have and the content of it. That was part of the problem. Therefore, the solution is frightfully important for the people themselves, but it's also frightfully important, and this is where it ties in with the security issues of the Eastern Mediterranean, because when I talk to you about the predictability, dependability, accountability, and the fact that Cyprus is in the Eastern Mediterranean, Cyprus must be able to exercise that role post-solution. Post-solution. In the Annan Plan that was voted down, it had almost 10,000 pages. I do not know if those that drafted it would ever have accepted it for themselves. Sometimes I joke and I say, well, any country that has population problems or they have communities, I said, well, here is a template. Bicommunal, bizonal, federal republic of. And you can put many countries there. Would that be acceptable? Almost 10,000 pages. 10,000 pages. Given to the parties a day before the referendum. And they expected it to pass. They were living on another planet. Now, the president and Mr. Akinji will not put a plan to the people unless they themselves agree. Because and that gives it a much greater chance for a resolution. So, the predictability, and I'm looking at my watch, I'm just about up. Since I want to come back here again, I have to be very, very correct with you, Professor Kevin. The predictability must be able to be guaranteed, I repeat, post-solution. We cannot be in homage to any third country because Turkey plays in the big league. Right now, Turkey has from zero problems to, shall I say, zero friends in the area. We want to decouple ourselves from these things. We do not want anybody telling us, I'm talking now post-solution, that listen, you should not do ABC with Egypt. You should not do ABC with Israel. You should not do ABC with this country or the other. That is our function as Cypriots. Therefore, the solution must have the attributes of a normal state. We cannot be neutralized. And this possibility of being neutralized, think Bosnia-Herzegovina, think of other things. It's not in the interest either of Cyprus. It's not in the interest of the United Kingdom, I believe. It's not in the interest, certainly, of Israel. Because Israel finds itself surrounded. Israel cannot go north. Israel cannot go south. Israel cannot go east. It has always been west. It has always been through our flight information region and those sea lanes that I have showed you. In the Annan Plan, it did say, Cyprus shall not put its territory at the disposal of international military operations. E.g., we could not have put ourselves at the disposal of ISIS, at the fight against ISIS. We did not hesitate. Others hesitated. May I say with respect that Turkey itself hesitated whether they would be fighting ISIS or not. For whatever reasons, which I can understand and which I can appreciate in the sense that every country defines its own national interest. Okay? But that's a fact. So if that provision was there and applicable, Cyprus shall not put its territory at the disposal of international military operations, we would not have been able to do it. Other than with the consent of both constituent states, until the accession of Turkey to the European Union, the consent of Greece and Turkey shall also be required. And I say, no, for heaven's sakes. Are we an independent state? Or are we not an independent state? Is it going to, the country's going to be evolved into a federal state, which nobody questions that, by communal, by zone, a federal republic? It must have the attributes. Now, hydrocarbons, and I finish. Hydrocarbons, some people say it's a blessing, some people say it's a curse. Golda Meir used to complain that despite the Jews special relationship with the Almighty. For more 40 years in the desert, the Almighty led them to Israel, to a place where they didn't have any oil and they didn't have any gas. Well, nobody should question the ways of the Lord. There you are. You have gas. You have possibly oil. Now, is this a game changer? Is it a blessing or is it a curse? It may sound strange. It may sound incongruous, what I'm going to say. But yes, it is a blessing. No matter, in the sense that if handled correctly, it is, the hydrocarbons in the Eastern Mediterranean is analogous to what coal and steel was for the European Union. I know it's hard to swallow right now. I know it's hard to say, well, how can you say that since the region is in such a state of flux? Think where Europe was 50, 60 years ago. A continent that had only new wars, 30-year war, World War I, World War II, a continent that has invented the greatest cruelty of man against man, which was the Holocaust, and here we are in what I said at the beginning, an experiment, an architecture, despite its faults, and there are plenty of faults, of the European Union that brought ushered in peace and stability. We believe the same thing can happen in the Eastern Mediterranean. Okay, because where you have interests overlapping interests, where you have money involved, where you have economic development involved, then things change. It is a game changer. Now, prices are of course very, very low. These things are, my professors here know better than I do, but the fact remains that we have them there and we can go forward. This has brought closer together Cyprus and Israel. It has brought closer together Cyprus and Egypt. Lebanon has yet to, because of the internal situation has yet to proceed with its licensing grounds and it's not in the same advanced stage as Cyprus, Egypt, and Israel. So that brought these countries closer together. And without wanting to make a mountain out of a mole, Cyprus has been instrumental in passing messages to countries that are not in talking terms with others and that are in a state of war. These are the kind of messages that we want to do. These are the kind of bridging things that we want to do in the Eastern Mediterranean. These are the things that we want Cyprus to be, a linchpin, because Cyprus is placed where it is placed. It was Cyprus that started all these delimitations agreements. Yours truly was at the United Nations, 7681, being part of our Law of the Sea delegation. It was, parenthesis, it was an ambassador, a Maltese ambassador called Arvid Parto of Malta, who said that the seas are the common heritage of mankind. A simple phrase, catchphrase, a buzzword, but a truism nonetheless. The seas are the common heritage of mankind, out of which sprang the Law of the Sea Convention. So I say to everyone, I say to my colleagues, I say to my good colleague Haralambos, who is always very, very good and humble, one good idea. It does not matter how big the country is, but how big the idea is. And this is what we're trying to do. So I hope I have set out what I was going to say in a relatively straightforward manner. Any questions, of course, I'm ready to be grilled. And that's it. Thank you very much.
I'm fine.
You're perfect. Thank you. And you also managed along the way to mention about tweeting and such like. So well done. I think you're the first person to speak to our audience and at the same time mention about Twitter. So that's very good.
I use it contrary to some commonly held beliefs, I do other things in my life other than tweet, but I use it as a tool of diplomacy, really. I think it's a good diplomatic tool, provided one uses it in a manageable way. But thank you.
So we have a good period of time for questions and answers and comments from the audience. You can see that we have colleagues with microphones. Can I invite you to put up your hand, say who you are, and ask a question, please. We'll take the gentleman right at the back in the middle. Please. We'll perhaps collect several.
Collect, well, yeah. What's our time frame?
About 20, 25 minutes.
Okay.
Hi. Good evening, Hi, Commissioner. Thank you for coming here. My name is Andreas Dimitriou. I'm doing a master's in global politics at LSE. And I wanted to ask you about your argument that Cyprus can play a role in as a security producer, as you put it, in the area. And you mentioned the growing Cyprus-British relationships and how they help address various security issues. You mentioned the trilateral talks that Cyprus has had recently with various countries in the area and the visit of Vice President Biden. I was wondering, could you expand a bit on these points? Because from a cynical viewpoint, one might say that imagining, for example, that Cyprus wasn't there,
yes,
some might say that all things will have more or less been the same. So I wonder if you could like strengthen those points a bit.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Let's take several questions. Can we take the gentleman here, please? There's a microphone coming.
Thank you.
Andreas.
Kyriakos Tsipras, Tsipras journalist. For many and obvious reasons, the European Union can play a very important role vis-à-vis the effort for a solution. How you do? Do you evaluate this role up to now?
Okay, good, thank you. And can we take my colleague in the middle here, please?
Yeah, Bernard Casey from LSE.
First name?
Bernard Casey from LSE.
Thank you, Bernard.
A friend of Cyprus. I actually have the map that you showed first of all as my screensaver on my PC at home.
I have it on my Twitter account.
Good,
my
they are.
Actually, sorry if I'm interrupting, but it is the Cyprus that I like. Big enough for everybody, no dividing lines, and that's the beauty about it all. But
that's sorry. Exactly why I have it as well. And that's why I like it too. I wanted to pick up actually on a term which you used where you talked about Cypriots of different ethnic backgrounds, and then you said that there were people who were Greek ethnically and people who were Turkish ethnically. But my experience of the place is that it's almost impossible to put people into nice little boxes, and you know as well as I do, I mean, villages in some parts of the island where people speak Greek but are Muslim, and you can find lots of other interesting groups like that. I always say to my friends, when I take them around, look around here. If you don't speak the language, how do you actually know where you are? And the only thing that possibly allows people to know where they are is if it is a high day and a holiday, some people might be going to this place and somewhere else, some people might be going into something else. It's not really an ethnic division, is it? It's something more than that. That place was always lots of different people. Think of the good old days of Byzantium, when there were people from all over Europe, North Africa and the Middle East, and they were all in Cyprus. And we somehow actually had coexistence very happily in those days and in subsequent days too.
Okay, good, thank you. So, everybody, we have three nice simple questions, wherever you wish.
Thank you. Where is the... could we just bring us back the Blau map, please?
Okay. Three nice easy questions. The first one was essentially on security. What difference to the region would have been made if Cyprus wasn't there in the recent past?
Cyprus is there. Okay? It is a hypothetical question. How would the life would have been if Cyprus was next to Luxembourg? Okay? Life would have been different. The narrative would have been different.
I can negotiate anything in life. I cannot negotiate geography. I can deny anything in life. I can deny my parents, my family. I cannot deny my geography. My geography is my destiny. Cyprus is there. Therefore, all these things that I talked to you about security producer, the fact that weapons, WMD, the destruction of the WMD in Syria, the fact that the maritime component of UNIFIL of Lebanon is based in Cyprus, the fact that we immediately gave all the facilities against ISIS, British bases, hotels when the soldiers were coming in, hospitals. These things are being a security producer than a consumer. I attended a lecture at Chatham House until not too long ago, maybe a year ago. They had a huge map, a world map. Cyprus wasn't there. Okay? But of course, it wasn't National Geographic. To be fair, it wasn't a National Geographic map. A number of other countries wasn't there, but I was looking at my own country. It's not there. I was feeling my DNA is not there. My identity is gone.
The British have always had a keen sensitivity about Cyprus, haven't we, really? We've shown that over the time.
Yes, absolutely. Let me tell you about it. Like I said, I still want to have a job after this. Why did I mention that? Because there was the Minister of Energy of Turkey came, and I attended. And they asked him a question about delimitation, because it was at the time that the Turkish military gunboat diplomacy was in the southern part of Cyprus, in the EZ. And they asked him, what's going on? And how about the delimitation agreements with Egypt? He says, well, there would have been no problem if your map was correct. Okay? Well, lo and behold, the next day, I was doing my, again, Twitter, I was writing like this, and now if you go to Chatham House, you will find a map of Cyprus on Chatham House. Therefore, I think I'm answering your question more or less. If I'm not, more than happy to also give my email to anybody. More than happy to take the conversation to another level, having meetings as well at the High Commission or anywhere to tell you a little more, because I'm not at liberty to say more what happened in the discussions between my Minister of Defense and Minister Fallon, and certainly not what happened with Biden. But the security aspect, I will stick to it, and which has to be, again, I repeat, has to be guaranteed post-solution as well. Mr. Tsipras, always in his wisdom, and how do you evaluate EU role now? Where would Cyprus be without the EU? I do not know. Where the European continent would have been without the EU? I do not know. Therefore, I evaluate the EU role positive. It was the EU of Cyprus's accession to the EU that basically broke the ceasefire line. And to this very same day, we have had close to 50, 60 million visits across the ceasefire line, incident-free. What does that say? The question leading into the question of Bernard. What does that say? Because the Idefix and the narrative has been, how terrible. Greeks and Turks have always fought. Greeks and Turks are in Cyprus. They fight each other, how terrible. We put the fire, and we will send you the fire engine. Answering slightly your question in another manner. Without answering it, of course. Because if quoted, I'll deny it, even though I'm on record.
But could the European Union do more now?
Absolutely. I do believe the European Union can do more, because Cyprus cannot be the odd person out. What is good for the goose is good for the gander. What is good for 27 members of the European Union must certainly be good for the 28th. You cannot.
So could you give us an example of something the European Union could do which could tangibly move things forward towards a solution?
Well, I think the implementation of the acquis. Right now the acquis is really suspended based on Protocol 10. It is suspended in the northern occupied part of Cyprus because the government does not effectively control. But I think that can go, and it is happening. There is engagement with the Turkish Cypriot community to make sure that post-solution, things are moving forward, because I repeat, Cyprus is one, Cyprus is east, west, north, south, as I said, except the two bases. Therefore, the European Union right now can push for more on the acquis, which should apply throughout the island, and also say, listen, guys, you know, this issue does not really it goes contrary to the acquis. That does not mean you take the acquis communautaire, the body of laws that governs the European Union, and you rubber stamp and you have, it doesn't work like that. And the acquis itself has a lot of exceptions and stuff like that. But my main concern, of course, is to be able to have the human rights and the acquis that exists for all the other countries in the European Union, which we now take for granted.
Okay, let's go for some more questions.
Some more questions, so we can.
We take the lady in the centre here.
There's
please.
Another lady in the back too. We will. But you're the moderator.
Okay. I realise that. So the microphone is coming. Yes, good. Thank
Hello.
You.
Hello.
But Bernard, I'm sorry. Did I shortchange you, Bernard? Did I answer your question indirectly? Okay, and here is your beautiful map of Blau, Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty, being pulled by the swans, to be born in Cyprus. She could have been born anywhere on Earth, but she decided to be born in Cyprus, and there's a reason. Those of you that haven't visited, please do.
Very good.
Please, now, let's, jokes aside, let's...
Fanul Argyro, journalist. Your Excellency, I would like to ask you, in a time when the British government, from the Prime Minister to the Home Office Secretary to the highest judge in the country, are trying to stop segregation and promote integration because it's a danger for the cohesion of society, as it was written the other day in the newspapers, how do you think a bizonal, bicommunal federation will fit in 2016, in the 21st century, in a small country like Cyprus, since it does not even comply with the rule of law and the principle of human rights? And one more thing, no government in Cyprus since 1960 has any mandate, especially after 74, to adjust the rights of the refugees and their properties into a territorial adjustment process. And one more thing, you mentioned about the Turkish Cypriots and the Greek Cypriots who left their land. The first, the Turkish Cypriots, they left voluntarily or by force by their own leaders since 58 to 64. The Greek Cypriots in 74, they were uprooted by the invading Turkish army. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Well done, you managed to get about 15 questions in one.
Good.
The lady right at the very back.
It's really getting exciting now. Now it's getting exciting. Professor Bissaridis is going to let me off the hook with the economic stuff. Oh, okay. Please.
Good evening, and thank you very much for your time
Your
tonight.
Name, please.
My name is Marina Haralambos. Marina. I work for the energy regulator here in London. And obviously, my question is going to focus on the natural gas fines. How do you see this issue being a risk, maybe, to a very new state, a new federation? How do you think it's going to affect the production of security by Cyprus after a possible solution, given the track record of scandals and maybe not very good handling of big issues so far? I'm being a bit pessimist just to spark discussion here.
You have every right to be pessimist.
Okay, good, thanks. Can we take the gentleman in the blue shirt?
Thank you. Andrew Dismore, London Assembly.
I'm sorry?
Andrew Dismore, London Assembly. Yes. Yeah. You mentioned Mr. Akinji, and I very much concur with what you said, but you said very little, if anything, about what's going on in Turkey. And I think the signs of the way the Erdogan government has been going, with greater Islamicization, perhaps further restrictions on democracy and protest, and the relationship between the EU and Turkey being dramatically affected by the migration crisis that's going on. You said there's no artificial deadlines in the process, but there is another deadline, which is the electoral deadlines on the island for both North and South. How do you actually see what's going on in Turkey actually influencing what's going on? And is it possible to actually get anywhere within the electoral cycles in both sides of the Green Line?
Great, thank you. Okay, do you want to take those? So the first one is about integration.
Okay, let me go with Fanula first. But Fanula, your question is very, very hard to answer. I would need a lot more than sound bites and 5 minutes, and because on something like this, I would not want to be horizontal, I would like to be vertical, okay? Now, the bottom line, I would challenge your premise that a bizonal Federal Republic is against the rule of law and that it institutes segregation. You have a number of Belgium one model, okay? One country that has a lot to be proud of, that has managed not even to have a central government and manage itself even more than Iraq managed itself without any government. There are ways of having a solution, bicommunal, federal solution that respects human rights and the rule of law. And that is not on the table. What is on the table, this is what's on the table. What is on the table is the joint declaration that I talked to you about of February, which I'm sure you know and you can recite by heart. We have to part company. We have to part company because I want to be forward-looking. I do not want to go back to 58, 64, 74. I mean, I can easily do that. And I can easily talk about what happened in 64. And many people will disagree with that, but at any rate, again, without being simple and without evading the question, I want the car to move forward. I want us really to reach a destination. When you're driving a car, you're going forward. Every now and then you look in your rearview mirror, make sure that nobody hits you in the back, fair enough. But if you keep looking at the rearview mirror, you're gonna crash. And okay, I mean, I know it's a simple way and I'm not really answering your question to the core, because no matter what answer I give, I know I will not be able to satisfy you, and I'm not here to satisfy you. I mean, I'm here to say things as I see them, as we want them forward. We want the solution of Cyprus to happen. 40 years is too long. The northern occupied part is changing day by day. The Cypriots of Turkish ethnic background are becoming a minority in their own community. Where would we have to look at Cyprus, where Cyprus would be 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, okay? Now, the question that Andrew asked is really also core. What is happening in Turkey? And whether Turkey itself is really willing to travel these extra miles nowadays. At least we have lip service to a solution, Andrew. But like I said, I did touch a little bit on the talk, that the proof is always in the eating of the pudding. This has to be tested on the in the negotiating table, because the core issues I said that basically Turkey will have to decide, pivotal for Turkey to decide, say key to the decision. I mean, people talk about an elephant in the room. I often talk about a dinosaur in the room, okay? And I'm not sure even whether they will come on board, but certainly the solution has to be by the Cypriots, of the Cypriots, for the Cypriots. And when I say Cypriots, let's not forget Maronites. Let's not forget the Armenians. Let's not forget the Latins. The other day, I was talking to a compadre of mine. He says to me, listen, I'm an Armenian. Where do I fit in all this? Why are you two guys negotiating? Where do I fit in this? I said, well, you're right. You know, and your human rights are going to be respected, of course, and your religious rights are going to be respected, and your cultural rights are going to be respected. But Turkey plays in the big league. Turkey, in the end, wants to neutralize Cyprus. The fact that Cyprus right now is playing a role in the Eastern Mediterranean with all these trilateral meetings that I said about, Turkey doesn't like that. But these meetings and these declarations are not directed against anybody else. Turkey can come on board as well, but they have to play by the rules of the game. It is the only country at the United Nations that every year, the only country that votes against the resolution on the law of the sea. Against. This is a rule-based international system. They have to come on board. They have to play a game. Now, on the marina, on the energy issue, corruptions, you mentioned corruptions in Cyprus. We have to clean the house. Yes. All these things that are happening, which Professor Bissaridis knows better than I do, They do not, we are trying to stamp it out. There are, I mean, it's not a country full of corruption, but there are scandals constantly. Now, the issue of the energy, I would, and the natural gas, I would say it's a unifier for the region, but also for Cyprus itself, because the issue where the natural resources belong, the natural resources belong to the federal government. I mean, the natural resources, onshore or offshore, will belong to the central government. So, in that sense, there is an incentive to come forward. Now, Fanula might say, "Well, what would the narrative have been if the natural gas were found in the northern part? What would have happened if the Greek Cypriots were saying, well, we need part of the ship?" Would the response would have been the same? Well, they're not. They're found in the southern part.
They would still be the Republic of
Cyprus. Exactly, they would still be. But it's one thing to be, and you can argue about it, and we argue about it, everywhere at the United Nations, okay? And it's another thing to effectively exercise these things and to go forward and to have a solution. You know, we have to do that.
Okay, let's take another round of questions. Can we take the gentleman here, please?
I think there was another lady in the back.
It's fine. You can talk and chair at the same time. Very good. Please.
Theo Theodorou, Lobby for Cyprus. Erdogan today said that to Mr. Akinzi that Morfu is not negotiable. We want to keep Morfu. You did say, High Commissioner, that the European Union was probably one of the best, in the last 40 years of established establishment in the region. Yeah, and see how it is evolving now. We're seeing that every nationality is living in harmony with each other, Muslims, Christians, and so forth. Now in Cyprus, and I'm just adding a little bit of flavor to what Fanula just said, we're trying to have two separate states, but those two separate states, if they were harmonious and there was no segregation, in other words, where we're having Christians on one side and Muslims on the other, why are we pushing towards such a segregation, such a very evident separation of the two states, not by purely, oh, this is a new federation. No, it's been done purely on the sake that this is what Turkey wants to happen. Okay. My second question is more
very
vertical.
Very quick.
It's a vertical question. What do you think about the security that we have at the present moment in the checkpoints as far as people moving from the occupied to the south?
Okay, good, thanks. Can we take a colleague here, please, in the front?
Is it for me? No, please.
Ladies first.
Gender balance, right?
Gender balance.
Okay, Thalia Magioglou from the Hellenic Observatory. I will ask a question as a social psychologist who, I'm ashamed to say, has not visited Cyprus yet. So one thing, you have talked about 40 years. So 40 years is a long time, and maybe conflicts are very powerful situations to create identities. So even if people want solutions, who they are could have been constructed through a narrative of this conflict. Would you say that, in general, from your feeling, the majority of people on both sides are ready to move forward? That's one thing. And the second, I have followed a seminar in Paris at the Maison des Sciences de l'Homme on the countries who have oil and hydrocarbon. And there was a comparison between countries in every part of the world, like Venezuela, Iraq, organized by an Iraqi researcher. And finally, they seem to say that it has not been very positive for the countries who disposed of this wealth. So, well, this is what...
I'm not sure if I understood your second question.
Other cases we've discovered islets that haven't been a good thing. Okay, Angelo.
I had two questions in my mind, a long one and a short one. I'll ask the short one. What...
Agilos.
I work at the LSE. What is Cyprus' viewpoint of the current migration crisis in the EU, and what is its position, and how does it plan to contribute to whatever solution the EU might come up with to facing the problem? Thank you.
Okay. Perhaps we can just take one more before finishing. Can we take the gentleman in the middle, please? Okay, I meant the gentleman in the white shirt, actually. I'm sorry, I didn't see you. I apologize.
Hi, my name is Nicolas Hajbandelis. I'm a PhD student in civil engineering. My question is a bit practical. So it's a bit practical in my view. So when the Annan plan came, I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. Now I'm reading back to understand what happened and why 76% of the Greek Cypriots rejected the plan. So now, 10 years after, how do we convince that part of the Greek Cypriots to change their mind and go, and drop that no, let's say, to 40%? So I believe that there must be something big happening between then and now to manage to convince these people. So we're talking about guarantees, we're talking about crucial issues. So how do you think, what are the major changes that will change the mind of those people and encourage them to vote yes? Why would Turkey be involved in such a depth to give away things like guarantees and all this to promote the solution?
Right, beautiful.
Okay. So we've got about 4 minutes and about four questions, so take it away.
It's interesting. Maybe we should have not had any introduction and just correct the questions. Next time we'll do it. Nicholas first, 14 years old when the ANA plan was, and 76 people voted no. What has happened since? Well, I would like to think greater maturity. I like to think a greater recognition that the situation is lose-lose and not sustainable. The economic crisis also has affected. The fact that the Turkish Cypriots selected Mr. Akinci as a leader, which was nowhere in the cards, was simply nowhere in the cards. In the end, all these things, I repeat, they have to be tested. The problem with 2004, it was the plan should never have gotten to a referendum in the first place. Okay? That was a tragic mistake. And like I said, almost 10,000 pages, the official text given a day before, all this spin and hype, all these things that happened. What happened there, it was there. Now, at this stage, lessons learned. The plan is not going to go to a referendum unless, first of all, the leadership agrees to go to the referendum, that it can sell to take care of these concerns that did not take care. No. So these are the things I think that happened in 10 years, and the greater recognition that it is lose-lose. You want to make it win-win, because you're going to be negotiating for the next 40 years? Okay. And it comes back to...
Talia asked a question about after 40 years, have identities become solidified in a separate, divisive fashion?
Isn't it? It is normal, isn't it? I mean, if there has been, since 74, a de facto separation, and there are narratives and need a fix about stereotypes, and that's why the beauty of the European Union, which basically opened up the ceasefire line, it was Mr. Denktaş that did it because everything was boiling, then people realized that other people don't have horns on their heads. And they are normal human beings trying to live a normal life. And what do normal human beings want? They want six things in life. They want a good healthcare system, they want economic opportunities, they want to send their kids to school, thank you very much, less taxes, and stuff like that. So I think, yes, there are problems of identity. Now, there is also a joint bi-communal teachers to not to rewrite history, because history is there, but at least not to
to have stereotypes of each community. There has to be a quilt, okay? And now.
There's the question about segregation.
About segregation. Listen, we don't look at it that way, because the only game in town is a bicommunal, bizonal federal republic. And we do not believe that that is based on segregation. I mean, people should not be categorized in terms of who they are based on their ethnicity, on their... it can. A bicommunal, bizonal federal republic, that's the only game in town. We are honoring it. We've signed for it. We're moving forward. That is the basis of the negotiations.
Nobody signed it. Sorry, nobody signed it.
Well,
nobody signed it. There is no signature in any so-called agreement.
Because, yes, there is no signature, but nobody takes away from the fact that we have agreed. We said so.
Well, there
I'm sorry?
There were guidelines.
There were guidelines. Okay.
Some press releases,
but my point is that if people right now are challenging the very the basis of the negotiations, which is a bicommunal, bizonal federal republic, I'm sorry, the government is not in that game. I mean, you have parties in Cyprus that said, no, it's unfair, it is segregation, it's not fair because Cypriot Greeks, Greek Cypriots are 80% of the population, the Cypriot Turks are 18, why should they get this, why should they get that? I can understand that. And I will fight to the bitter end for the right to say so, but I don't agree. The government is not relenting, is not challenging a single iota of that. We have the joint declaration of the president and the Turkish Cypriot leader of 11 February 2014, Haralambe, 11 February 2014, and it's all there. Now, I think we can devise it through by not violating European Union rules. Erdogan's statement today that Morfu doesn't come, I think if Morfu doesn't come, then the situation becomes increasingly difficult. Okay. The other thing that I also did not talk about is the financing of the solution. Those people that will opt for compensation, and it's not just the financing is not just compensation or Famagusta itself, to go in and build in a whole town from basically ground zero. The new structures that will come from a federal government, I mean, the price tag on that, Mr. Akinji himself gave the number of 25 to 30 billion. Who's going to pay that money? One of the problems of 2004 is that the federal government would have been the one giving compensation to the refugees. And the refugee said, let me get this right. I was expelled from my home. Now I will be paying auto-compensation because 80% of the taxpayers would be Greek Cypriots. 18%, 20% would be Turkish Cypriots. So that was another reason that went wrong in 2004. Lessons learned for 2015, 2016. So if I didn't touch at all on that, but if there is a, you know, and in 2004, when we had the pledging conference, there was something like $400 million that they were pledged, 300 of which were pledged by the United States. Now, if we have something similar nowadays, you know, 400, 500, or whatever, that's not going to fly. If Morfu doesn't come back, it's not going to fly. If Turkey insists about having a unilateral right of intervention, that's not going to fly, okay? We will not throw the baby out together with the bathwater. At the same time, we are ready, and we have been compromising because we do see a solution as a win-win. I know win-win sounds like a cliche, but it's also a truism as well. Now, okay. Who else?
It was the final question about migration in Cyprus.
Migration in Cyprus. Listen, that issue can potentially, migration and terrorism can then potentially split up the European Union, okay? Here is a Greek colleague, Mr. Bigas, who is more well-versed on these issues than I am, because Greece has been on the forefront. On the forefront. When the South was saying about these issues, I mean, when Greece was saying this, when Malta was saying, Italy, nobody was really listening. Now everybody's listening because it's not no longer in the shores of Europe, they're inside. Our take on this is that really you have to address root causes. You have to have a political solution on the ground, Okay? You have to address the causes that cause the refugees. Now, but it is a proxy war, what is happening in Syria, and it's not just the Syrian refugees themselves. You have other migrants, and it's putting, really for the first time, the European Union really testing its values. If Tartus and Latakia fall, Cyprus will be overwhelmed. If something happens in Lebanon, Cyprus will be overwhelmed. For the moment, it's manageable for us, you know, because many do not come to Cyprus because they do not see Cyprus as a route to Europe. Cyprus is a small country. Some of them that come, they say, listen, we don't really want to stay here. You know, give us a passport so we can go to Sweden, to go to the United Kingdom, to go to France. Okay? So it is a huge issue. Let me close by a quotation of an American author, William Arthur Ward, W-A-R-D, who wrote Fountains of Faith. And this, I think, maybe it sums it all up, Fanula, Theo, and some of my other compatriots. I have not seen any. Do we have any Cypriots of Turkish ethnic background in the audience? I was expecting you to ask a question. You didn't ask me a question.
You can have a conversation.
Afterwards. And if I shortchanged anyone, I will be more than happy to give you my personal email. Send any questions. I will answer them. I can come back again. You can come in the High Commission, which is your home. But let me say, because I like William Arthur Ward, the pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change. The realists adjust the sails. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to adjust the sails in a turbulent sea, which is the Eastern Mediterranean. Thank you. God bless you, each and every one, your families and everyone.
Sorry, if we could just hold on one second. It is normal on these occasions to recognize our speaker and to thank you very much indeed. We hope you will take this away with you, a small gift from the LSE to commemorate the occasion.
I thought it was a check of several billion so we can finance this. I was reading that Harvard has something like 315 billion endowment fund.
I think we need to talk about endowment. Okay, thank you very much.
But thank you.